You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try. Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In the studio with me is Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
We've got with us, of course, E.T.
What up?
That stands for Engineer Tiffany. And a special guest back by popular demand. Although I can't really say popular demand. Well, okay, here's the deal about popular demand. The episodes we recorded with him earlier haven't been released yet, but... And so it's not like...
That was our demand.
Yeah, it's like not like listener popular demand yet, although we assume that'll be the issue or the situation. It's by our popular demand. And plus, he just lives like an hour and a half down the road, so it's easy for him to get here. Travis Taggart, how you doing, Travis?
Not bad.
Excellent. And so we were sitting out on the deck drinking some mojitos. And let's go through that recipe really quickly.
Oh, you need simple sugar, lime juice, Captain Morgan spiced silver, which is the secret ingredient, and a buttload of limes.
And some fresh mint.
Oh, and mint from now, the garden.
It's not just a little bit of fresh mint either.
It's actually you a need, lot.
Yeah, you
but,
need.
But and
okay, and so Tiffany
we
smuggled.
Find any.
Tiffany smuggled mint in from Portland because we didn't have any local mint yet.
Mint.
It was hipster mint from Portland, and I believed she swallowed a condom of mint. at the outside the Portland airport, and she brought that in, and then she brought what she had, and because it's just getting to be mint season around the world, and we got here and we're thinking, well, we're gonna drink more mojitos than that, and then miraculously the sun came out, and in a matter of 48 hours the mint appeared in my yard, and so it was like it was like a podcast miracle, and so, or like I prefer to say science goal, because miracles not so much not as reliable as science. And so we were sitting around on the deck in the sunshine, drinking mojitos and having a conversation, and we decided to record a version of that. That's why this episode is called "The Conversation We Had Outside
on the Deck."
On the deck,
while drinking mojitos.
It's going to be a long one. Okay, so...
Or a short one about absolutely
nothing. Yeah, we'll see where this goes. Okay, so there we go.
Well, okay, so I'll own this. I had originally said that I wanted to have a conversation about the concept of pipeline in twofold, in that how are we nurturing and grooming and noticing and pointing out those who are... perhaps in the pipeline to be speakers and advocates of early childhood education, maybe the future speakers and the authors, like all the people out there, like the frontline out doing your trainings for you. Like, so how do we start paying more attention to who those people are? But then also pipeline in the sense of who is coming up the ranks to actually do the frontline work, right? Who'd be sitting in the seats and listening to the training. And I realized in a moment that I probably have not been as mindful of that. Well, I've been mindful in the sense that I've had observations, but not necessarily mindful in actually doing anything about it. I've noticed that I struggle with the fact that everything that we're out there preaching to be best practice, most of the people in the audience didn't actually receive that. So I struggle with that issue. And I really want to be better at embracing the fact that there's lots of us out there talking about what playful learning looks like and what best practice looks like, and that not one person has to be kind of the keeper of the knowledge of early childhood education. So and not to be morbid, but I started to think, you know, and I'll be this totally came out because Bev Boz died, and I started thinking like, you know, what happens next? You know, and I'm starting to think about my legacy and how did I benefit from what she taught me, and what would I like it to look like after I died? And I would like to think that at some point I surrounded myself with a tribe of people who not only would then go out because I died, but her, who were already doing that work. And I called Jeff and I said, I want to start having conversations about pipeline. And that's what I threw out on the deck. See, and it was just as well received the first time.
Yeah. All right. So where do we go from there? I think it's all about building a community of engaged and interested, like-minded, lifelong learners is what it's about.
I like the word tribe. I know it sounds kind of oh, yeah. You know,
That's all Seth Godin-y. Seth Godin is awesome, and he talks a lot about tribes in his book. And we've all, especially with social media now, we all build our, you know, we're not forced to be connected to the people we were born with anymore. We can go out into the world and connect with the people we feel connected to. And so I guess what we're really interested in doing is figuring out how to connect a group of like-minded people in the early learning profession and work together to not only lift the individuals in that group up, but to lift up the profession.
And I know you want to jump in, but I'm going to say one more thing because I'm going to so forget it. And to not just be surrounding ourselves with patty on the backers. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you have that vacuum of just like we're all sitting around talking about how what we see in our head is what it should look like. And, you know, that's fine. And there's room for that kind of support amongst the tribe. And where are you getting and bringing in the new blood that's going to have the idea that, you know, you've kind of brought yourself as far as you're going to be able to go. So how are you plugging into the energy of what's coming next in order to, you know, coach them or facilitate. I don't even know what the right words are, but to not think that just because there's 12 people here, that this is it, you know, there's more. How do I welcome them? How do I find them and not be scared by what they might share that might look different or feel different or sound different or smell different than what I had become used to doing, even though the message is exactly the same, right? The intention and the focus and the philosophy, but the execution of it might be a little bit different. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, I think that it has a lot to do with making sure that we're not putting ourselves in echo chambers where everyone around us is just saying the exact same thing over and over again. And I think that we get so used to that that we forget that we can apply to ourselves and our field the same amount of relationship and tribe, like just community orientedness that we apply to our programs and the kids there. Because if you want people to be super engaged and involved, I don't think that the way of doing that is forcing them to sit down and listen to everything that you have to say and hoping that they'll walk away super interested in going on. I think they need to be just as motivated to get to where we are or to where anyone there is. And so the only way to get new people involved is to catch them while they're still on the fence about what we're doing or even while they totally disagree with everything we're doing. It's super important to catch them because most of us got to where we are by totally being that person and being the kind of person who would never go near that kind of program. And then something happens and we find our way here. And so it's just super important. Someone has to be there to convince the people who are on the fence or totally against it.
I like the concept of catching them. I'm thinking about like...
Is this involve... sneaking up on people in the parking lot
and pushing them over the fence.
Use the word indoctrination, which sounds so bad. It has so many negative connotations to it.
But
that's what it is: catching them while they're young and excited,
ripe and ready,
and open to change. Like not many people, after they've spent a lot of time in this field, are very excited about changing. And I know that because I've hired so many people and had to let them go within weeks.
All right, we got to role play that. So, here's the characters. Lisa Murphy, you're somebody that you're trying to indoctrinate somebody. You're an experienced caregiver, you're a speaker. It's after a conference or something, and you run across young Travis who's been in your presentation, looked really attentive, and you're trying to indoctrinate him into
I don't like that at all.
You don't like indoctrination?
Drink the Kool-Aid, right? To me... the people who are ready present themselves to you after the workshop.
Okay, we'll make that part of the scene. Okay. He comes up to talk to you.
Okay.
And you're trying
I'm cleaning
to,
up. I'm trying to clean
you're
up
cleaning
and
up,
get my
and
plane.
He comes up to talk to you and you're trying to get to your plane. Well, let's be realistic. Lisa Murphy's trying to clean up and get to the bar and then get to the plane.
Oh, shut up.
Come on.
Okay.
Let's be honest with the people. And Travis comes up and he's approaching you and how do we indoctrinate him?
Well, it depends on what he says. It depends on what the entry point is.
Well, here we go. And action.
I was really interested in what you just talked about. Tell me more.
What were you most interested in?
Oh, just this whole idea of letting kids play. How does that work?
How does that work?
Whoa. That's all it would take for me, to be quite honest. I am very easily impressed. I am always easily impressed.
And scene.
No, but seriously, that's all it is.
That's real. Someone just has to throw it back. Throw the exact same thing back at them. Well, anytime someone comes up to me and says, well, how are they learning things? I'm like...
And I'm wondering what you're thinking they should be learning.
What does learning mean to you?
And what does that... Yeah, yeah. Always. I always bring them back to the glossary. I mean, you know, there's longtime listeners who are like, my God, Lisa Murphy can only talk about six things. You know, that damn glossary and that damn binder. But it's true. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by play? What do you mean by getting ready? What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? And being willing to have that conversation, because the other stuff is just fluff. Mm-hmm. Until I actually know what you mean by that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of, we talked about this last time I was here, but just the whole idea that not all opinions are equal matters there, because if someone comes up to me and asks me something, I'm like, well, what is your opinion on it? Tell me why we're different. Tell me why what I just said was super interesting to you, because I don't know where you are. I don't know what your opinions are, but I'd love to get to the same level, but I need to know where you're at mm-hmm. first. Because a lot of times people just think that there's people who think like me and people who don't, and that's it.
There's
so many, it's a whole spectrum of people that it could be anything, that they don't know whether or not it's okay for the classroom to be loud. Whether it's okay or not for the kids not to have to line up, whether it's okay that they don't know their ABCs. Sometimes I have teachers who come in, they're like, okay, I get the playing, I get all of it, but is there anything that will help them out in kindergarten? Like, what do we need to do to get them ready for kindergarten? I just say, well, what do you think that means? Like, what does ready for kindergarten mean?
Well, I try not to sound like I'm over, like, getting all in that. But if you're telling me that you believe in everything that we've done today, but yet you still have this question, then that tells me there's either something in my message that isn't coming across the right way, or you still think that something should be different. It's just interesting to me. I don't even know what I'm saying right now, because my brain is going 1,000 miles an hour.
Well, I think a part of this is that we live in this world where a lot of people are equating their opinion with actual
research.
Science. And you know, I'm just a mild mannered cattle farmer from Northwest Iowa. I don't know a whole lot about the world, but my experience is that opinions, while they can be fact based, aren't research and aren't science. And sometimes we get so bound up in our own thinking and our own experiences that the idea of something fresh and new based on actual research done by qualified people in a controlled environment is scary to us. And it leads to, when you present people with that stuff, it leads to a lot of yeah buts.
Mm-hmm. So if you claim to believe that this is true, this being, let's say, the canon of developmentally appropriate practice, I struggle often with why is there that and but. So you're telling me that this is what you believe in, but you still want to know the answer to this question, mm-hmm. which if you really honestly believed what you just said you believe in, this question really wouldn't necessarily be in your head. And so I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I struggle with being empathetic and patient with that question.
Yeah, I think when people pose that question, it's mainly out of just skepticism in general of the entirety of it. Because a lot of people, I mean, if you go to get your like elementary education degree, all of the stuff that we would consider to not be good practice is presented to them as if it's factual.
Because that's just how it's done.
Yeah, and they cite the sources. And I think any time that someone says, well, here's my
source. But a source is different than research. And, you know, please hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Your blog post could be a source.
Yeah.
This is where I get super fired up is people are like, well, here's my source. And it's like some weird Yahoo answer that some Joe Schmo posted in the middle of the night.
10 years ago at 1 in the morning.
Yeah, like that's not...
that's not research.
We need to educate ourselves about what a primary source is, mm-hmm. and when you actually need to back something up with research, what does research look like and mm-hmm. what does research mean?
Yeah, and definitely all of the really high budget research that goes on for education, like by the Buffett Foundation and Bill Gates. I mean, you think about all that's being presented to these people, like
follow the money.
Yeah.
Everybody needs an iPad.
That's why you should buy our curriculum.
Yeah. It's being presented to these people. So I think that anytime if they are the right, or if they are in the right mind of skepticism, like we would probably want them to be, that's gonna be a question that comes up every now and again, is that I may be there, help me push myself over to your side of the fence, but it just comes off in such a way that it's like, oh, well, it doesn't sound like you're actually getting this. Do I need
Which
to
is why
expand?
I think the vocabulary glossary thing is helpful, even for me just to gather information. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, even with the kids.
Oh, totally.
Like, when one of them says, oh my gosh, you're so stupid. You go, well, what does stupid mean? Almost always they're like, oh, I haven't thought about that. I don't know what that means.
means a mean thing I could think of to say?
Yeah.
Every and you don't
I
let
say
me
it,
say
blah, me,
so I can say stupid.
Stupid. Stupid. Uh-oh, Tiffany's written. I can tell when Tiffany gets fired up because she leans into her microphone.
We had a kid who wasn't allowed to say stupid, so.
Who told him he wasn't allowed to say stupid?
You know, his mom.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So one day someone confronted him and he said, you motherfucker.
I didn't say stupid.
I think that might have been the first time Tiffany, this is like Tiffany's 18th
Dude,
episode.
I was already
us.
There. First time she swore.
Congratulations, Tiffany.
You are
I
now
like that.
An official
I like that.
Child care
I
buying like that. Girl podcaster.
So when it comes to sources and the internet, if the page you reference is, oh, say one paragraph in all caps.
In a comments post
on a free site with maybe flashing magenta links to GeoCities links that might make you question the validity of that, and if it's coming from an organization that is trying to sell you either product or an idea, that might make it a little bit questionable.
Anywhere on the website, if they are anywhere on the website trying to sell you something, it's wrong.
What was that thing on it was the meme post on April 2nd? Or no, April 1st is the only day anybody in the world questions what they read on the internet. Like, and how sad is that?
And there are websites or apps that you can get for your website browser that score the trustworthiness of the source that you're on. Just you can see it in the corner. It'll turn from green to red.
Oh, interesting.
I think one of them is called World of Trust or something like that. It's just WOT. And anyone can get it if they have Chrome, Internet Explorer.
I would call it WTF. Like, what's the WTF? Like, what the?
Like, whenever you're on a news site or something that your crazy aunt posted on Facebook, it'll even show up next to her name to show you whether or not the link she's sharing is trustworthy or not. And it Ooh. Bases it based off of just the general, like if they're selling things, and then you can also rate the website. Like you can say, well, they didn't cite their stuff, so I need to rate this to see.
So the definition of research, according to the interwebs, is the systematic investigation into and the study of materials and sources in order to establish facts and reach new conclusions. Synonyms: investigation, experimentation, analysis, fact finding, field work, examination, and scrutiny.
None of those were opinion.
None of that sounds like Googling for a couple of hours, because that's what so many people like. I've done my research on vaccines. I Googled vaccines are bad, and all these things came up. Like,
right?
No.
Who wrote those blog posts?
What is their scoring from green to red?
Snopes is another one you can
use.
Yeah. And along with the internet trustworthiness, anytime something is an opinion, mm-hmm. it is not a fact. Even though you may believe it, mm-hmm. that's the most dangerous to me, is when you hear an opinion and you're like, yeah, I have that same opinion. Must be true.
well, that's everything that I write is presented as an opinion. And so many people get on those comment sections and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're writing about this. This, like, they're offended. It's just like, no, if I were presenting this as if it were, as if I knew right now that I've done my research and this is a fact, that would be different. Like, you can say, you can be upset because if it's presented as a fact, then that's, you're just wrong. So you can feel bad about that. But when it's presented as my opinion, the only person who thinks you're wrong is me.
Okay, so hold on. I just found another definition. This is actually the Merriam-Webster definition of research that says the activity of getting information.
Ah, so that is the word research. It's the same thing as right? Like, the word, like, the layperson word theory means something completely different than what theory means in science. Theory in science does not mean a hypothesis or something that you're thinking about. A theory in science is something that you have proven, which is super confusing for people because it almost means the opposite thing. But it's something that was a hypothesis that you have proven, and they changed the lowercase t to a capital T. And so when you say, well, I've done my research, that's different. But I have researched this, this, and this is totally different.
I reviewed the research. Yeah. Yeah. Careful study that is done to find and report new knowledge about something. Yeah, so be mindful of how you're using the word research.
Yeah, I've done my research, or have you been researching this as part of your graduate program?
Have you been researching the research? Yes. You've been moving in. The collecting of information about a particular subject.
And then the next level of this is that you have to read and interpret that research.
Yeah, it's just
Do you know what? I actually got into a really interesting conversation with the board of the IOIC, Indiana Association for the Education of Young Children, which is where I was before podcast week. So even though you're listening to this, you know what, in June, July, this was April, and we talked about this. I said, you know what? One of the things I'm really good at, and this is a patty, I'll own it. I'm really good at reading research and figuring out how to translate that. And one of the women on the board said, well, you know, you can actually get your PhD in that. It's research in, is it interpretation or the interpretation of the scientific interpretation of research or something like that? Like, it's actually a program that teaches you how to do that better.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why would I spend, you know, $40,000 on something that I know I already know how to do, right? But who knows? I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
But I've always seen that my role, one of my roles, but my main role, the mission of my company is that dissemination of information. And the reality is that the information that a lot of our frontline people need to have access to, they're not going to read it. And that's not a judgment call at all. At all. I'm on a plane 4 times a week, right? So I can read it and then figure out how to get it into the message so that maybe somebody's going to be inclined to either act on it and I can verify the source if they quote me, or might motivate them to actually figure out how to get a copy of that.
And most people don't have access to catalogs, which is another huge issue, because then the only thing that they can read are the abstracts and the titles, the abstracts and the titles are not the conclusion.
Recommendations for further study.
Yeah, very rarely do they put the conclusion they have come to in the abstract, because that's just not good practice.
So now we're back to the potential echo chamber.
So then you go and like you can Google like why is play good for kids, and you can see this whole abstract, but you're seeing what they did and what methods they used to do it. And that's about it. Sometimes there might be a few sentences that look like it's the conclusion they came to. It never is. It never is. That's the whole point of having an abstract.
So is there a conversation that needs to happen about making that information more accessible to the general public? Or like, why do I have to be enrolled?
Generally, you can't even get them at public libraries.
You can't. No. The only time I had access to that was in my master's program. Yeah. And then they gave you a window. Like 6 months after you graduated to still have access to that. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, boom, windows closed.
They slam it on your
fingers. They do. They slam it.
And at the same time, I'm like, well, if you can get a subscription to one of those for the same amount as you would probably pay for your Netflix.
Oh, now see, okay, so you just taught me something. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can find a whole bunch of different catalogs that...
Define catalog for our listeners.
Well, normally...
it's not like to discount school supply catalog.
Yeah, normally these catalogs are online. They've got just a whole... They contract with magazines and journals for science, or just, I don't think it's ever really just science. Sometimes there are education ones, but very rarely are they good to listen to because they're
can
all paid.
Can you find a link to something?
They're all paid for. Do you want to look up?
Can you look up something that we might be able to give?
Oh,
I'm working on it.
Okay. Okay.
And so they contract with these programs to pay them royalties for when people click on the link to view the whole paper. And almost any time that you look up and find a study online, there will be a link under it to be like, click here to
access
gain
there.
Access to this.
Mm.
Or to
you have
these.
To pay for the rest of the PDF.
Yeah, you can do it.
But if it's a membership, so for a year yeah. I can have always access, then I would pay that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
It's
I
great,
can go to
but
bed now.
To,
I learned
you
something.
You also have to be careful because a lot of them. You have to do your
research.
You have to do your research on finding the research.
The research.
Yeah, you have to do your research on which article or which journals they're working with. And figure out whether or not those ones are credible. Because I think I talked about this last time I was here, too, that there was a TV show last year that paid the fee to get into one of these academic journals, and they just posted the script of mm-hmm. their entire TV
yes.
show into the program that they used to put this out. And then this article put it, or this journal put out this article that was just
based on...
It was just a script. Like, it wasn't an,
you did
it
talk
wasn't
about
an
that.
Article at all.
Well, success.
You guys, I found the best thing.
What'd you find, Tiffany?
Do you know about JSTOR?
Yes.
I think that might... Let me see the website, because that might be the one that I use.
JSTOR I had access
yes,
to when I was
yes,
in my grad school program.
You can sign up for JSTOR with a free account and read up to 3 articles every 2 weeks.
Ooh. How long is that for? Ooh. A year? And JSTOR is the letter J and STOR.
I have a lifetime membership through my college. So
ooh,
look into
so
that.
What, you think you're special? Some sort of princess or something because of that? Oh, you
sometimes
do.
Sometimes I feel special for my JSTOR. It's not a lie.
I just have a lot of medical journals. I have to pay per article for the science-y ones, the more... psychological ones.
So speaking of science-y and the echo chamber we've been talking about, what about confirmation bias? Because that doesn't that create an echo chamber too? When we tend to search for the stuff we
that's
already
prove our own point.
That proves our own point, and then interpret the stuff that we find in a way that proves our own point too. So we have a built-in bias for that too, that makes it more echoey
well,
in the chamber.
Well, early childhood educators notoriously are really, really, really bad at throwing out the sacred cows that make the best burgers. So we actually find peer-reviewed research that says this practice was adopted, we've been doing it for years, and might be time to start changing our
yeah.
mind. And early childhood educators are horrible at saying, okay, let me figure out how to adopt this.
No, we're like more.
That okay. comes back to the view that teaching is an art, not a science.
Like, I don't need to worry about this because it still works.
This is my art.
Yeah.
This is, you can't tell me how to do my job.
It's an art. It's an art.
Whereas if somebody said, like, hey, mathematician, we just got this new theory. And if they were like, nah, this is my
yeah.
art.
No, sorry. This theory still works.
Nope.
Yeah, usually,
on my calculator, this one still works.
Everybody would be like, wow, you must be a bad mathematician. Why don't people say that about teachers?
I do, and I get in trouble for it. So,
amen to you. But then, so, okay, Lisa Murphy's bias is now showing. So how does that circle back to the personality that is attracted to this industry that is just on some level completely unwilling to accept that the way they've always done it isn't the way it should now
yeah.
be done. And I probably talked about this the last time you were here, but the soup analogy has been working for some reason. When I say, you know, we've all been making soup, you know, but, you know, along the way, somebody said you're using too much salt or you should put a little bit more vegetable in there. And somehow that's a way of, I don't know. And I don't like to make it sound like an age demographic thing, but older people in the profession have been more inclined to embrace that. I'm like, nobody's saying your soup was shit.
Yeah.
But your soup coulda, shoulda, woulda been, but you didn't know, but now we know. So you're choosing now to not make your soup better, even though we now know that this is going to make your suit better. So your lack of willingness to even revisit modifying the soup recipe, that becomes my Lisa Murphy issue right there. You know,
yeah.
Right? Your yeah. soup is going to be a little bit better. Everybody, you know, take this away, you add a little bit of this.
Yeah.
Why would you not do that? If at the end of the day, we have evidence that says your soup is going to be the kick-ass soup on the street. Nope. My soup is just fine.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is.
Well, it's fine, but it's not as good as it could be. So why are we so stubborn?
Yeah. When did me saying add this equate to me saying no, you're doing your this
job
horribly?
That's exactly how it's heard.
Yeah.
That is how it's heard.
And
your soup
unfortunately,
sucks.
You have to think about what kind of things are the kids saying to them that they are now like overreacting to there. Like if a kid says, oh, well, I don't want to do your circle time right now.
That means your circle time sucks.
Yeah. How are they reacting to that? If I can shut them down by saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't do circle time. Imagine what these kids who they hopefully love are getting when they walk away from the circle time. Or they get angry one day and say, I don't like you. Like that kind of thing. Yeah. Usually, if you're going to be that emotionally charged about your pedagogy, then you should probably reassess whether or not this is the field for you. Because you have to be pretty emotionally solid. And I know that that's not what this field attracts most of the time. I see a little bit of it changing in my state with our QRS, but I would never attribute that to the QRS. I would just say that a lot of times once the job gets a little more serious and more expectations are thrown at you, the people who are just like, oh, well, I just want to play with kids all day.
I love them.
I love them.
I love kids.
They're pudding so painting cute. Is awesome.
I'm so good with them. I'm so good with kids. Everyone tells me that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the word FOR mean to you? Are you good for kids? Does that make any sense to you? But like every time I ask that question in my interviews when I interview new people, and almost every time it's, oh, well, everyone tells me I'm good with kids.
Right, but are you good for
them?
And
I was like, well, what do you think I meant when I said for?
Ooh, this is interesting. Hold on.
And who's everyone? Who's everyone? Did Mr. Piaget tell you that? Or I mean, who's Pidgeot? Everyone? Mr. Pidgeot?
All of the people who want to come out to get a job. Yeah. And unfortunately, where I am, the unemployment rate's so low that the pool.
And it's like my mom told me I was good with kids. Well, let's get some more credible.
It's because there were six of them, yeah. And she needed me to change a diaper.
She wanted to get back to the bar.
The best employees I have are the people who never in a million years would have seen themselves in a preschool. Who I just said, like, you have a really great, understanding, empathetic personality. You're open every time we do anything. You're open to whatever's coming next. I think that if you spent 3 weeks with me, you'd love this job. And it's really scary.
Drink my Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it's indoctrination. Yeah. I make them feel real good about themselves and then pull them in. Because it's really those people. I don't need people who can teach the ABCs. I don't need people who are good at teaching sign language or yoga. I don't need to know whether or not you have successfully potty trained 800 toddlers in your life. If you can formulate really good relationships with the kids and the parents and have a really good cooperative situation with them, almost always it's a good fit. Whether or not you have ever been involved in the discipline aspects of everything means nothing to me.
Or birth them.
Yeah, that too. Well, I get that a lot because I have not birthed any of my own children.
Well,
my niece does think I birthed my dog.
Oh,
I let that.
Well, that would be a fun blog post.
I let that assumption continue.
Oh,
on my own.
We get the video from Meredith too. Okay, so
I'm leaning in to give a plug to scholar.google.com.
Is that another good one?
Yeah, the Google Scholar search.
Yeah.
But it often jumps you right to the abstract, right?
Yeah.
But it's still, there is a difference, a Google search versus a Google Scholar search for our listeners are two entirely different kinds
and
of searches.
As long as you know how to Google something with objectivity in your head, I mean, all you have to do is Google research children play. Like, just three, like, they don't, it doesn't have to be a sentence. A lot of people think you have to be like, is play good for
gender? That's, no, yeah. Well, that's actually an interesting sidebar gender. We've noticed this. It's a gender thing. How women Google search versus guys.
Yeah.
We type like in a paragraph. So I'm wondering where the article is about that one time that I found.
Correction,
that.
You type in a paragraph. What are you talking about right now?
Don't throw her under the bus.
I'm not throwing
anybody under the bus. There's no bus.
You can, there's so many cool things you can do with a Google search bar. You can put the phrases that you want. So you can do like, play in early childhood. Just put quotations around it. It'll show you everything that has ever used that exact phrase. It'll only search for that exact phrase if there are quotations around it. Also, if you want to keep certain things out of your search results, such as NAAYC or any of these places that you're not a big fan of,
Jeff's chuckling in the corner.
all you have to do is put minus NAAYC. It'll never show
up. You're giving everybody like a crash course in how to do.
Yeah.
If you put it in quotes, Google is going to look for that exact phrase. Mm-hmm. And if you put a minus in front of it, it's going to take those things away.
So like a lot of people, I mean, the only reason I found out about that is because a lot of people use that for trigger warnings. Like if they don't want to see certain things about like child abuse in the research that is coming up, they would put minus quote child abuse unquote. And then it won't show anything that incorporates that phrase into it.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, and you can look up. There's a whole bunch of them that I probably don't know about. It's like Google tips and tricks for searching on Google. Yeah. And it's one of those they taught it to us my first year in med school, and it was just, I mean, it was revolutionary.
Mind blown.
Yep.
I also have to go back to Google Scholar because there's an amazing thing that it does that JSTOR doesn't do. Wow, we're nerding out hard right now. Where is Heather, that ECE nerd?
Hold on, I'll ask her.
With Google Scholar, you can search for an article that you like and know and trust. And then below that, it'll list cited articles by. You can click on it and it'll list every article that references that article you like.
Wow, that's awesome.
JSTOR doesn't do that.
Yeah.
So you have to have two tabs going at a time.
Take my Ritalin.
And that's what I had to say about that.
Oh my gosh.
That's all I had to say about that.
Yeah.
I got it.
That was Forrest Gump. That was Forrest Gump. Come on.
Come on.
Have you not seen Forrest Gump?
I have.
Okay.
I was still looking at this JPEG.
She was still nerding out.
There's so many levels of JSTOR access.
Yeah. What are they? What is the cheapest? Does it say
the
prices?
Cheapest is the free. Well,
there you go.
Great. Yeah.
You can look up whether your local library or an institution in your area has JSTOR access.
Okay.
Would
that be full access, does it say? That might be important to know.
I don't know.
Okay.
That might be important to know. And then there's the create a free My JSTOR account. And that isn't full access. That is a look for the read online free button above the article. And then you can buy a single article by price, which is the worst option, FYI.
That's what I do, unfortunately. for the ones that aren't related to neuroscience, I have to pay. Ooh. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And then, within that buying articles business, you can like subscribe for a year for $200.
That's good.
Or you can pay $20 a month. There's the Netflix pricing.
There we go.
So what I'm going to say is to the administrators who might be listening, one, this would all be a write-off. To the family childcare people, this would all be a write-off. If you, let's face the fact, $200 can be a lot of money for, somebody making $8 an hour. But to the administrators or the owners, if you have a subscription perhaps at your site and then your staff, so 18, 20 people now have access to actual real research, as would your parents. And that could be, to me, a little brochure bullet point, that our staff have open access to the research that's influencing
Imagine
early childhood.
How heavy that binder would be.
That the binder. Oh, and can I sidebar here for a second? There was a chick that posted something on Twitter, and I'm sorry, I don't know your name right now, and I'm not going to toggle between the screens. She posted a picture of her binder, and somehow it got circulated like I had just seen it. And I saw it, and I like, oh my God, that's awesome. And she posted this morning, well, you should see my binder now. That picture was from a year ago. Now she has two binders.
And I was like, I felt like a midwife. Like I felt like a midwife, like somebody going, another two. It was very exciting. Oh, man. What are you doing? You've been awful quiet over there.
I've just been enjoying the nerdiness.
Here's another option.
Some sweet. Oh, here's some more sweet, sweet nerdiness.
As I push up my glasses. Journal of Play is free online.
Well, and that's published. That's my town. The International Journal of Play, which is a peer-reviewed journal. So that, you know, it has a cute little cover, simple but cute, but it counts as capital R research. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's good stuff. The first, it's free online. You can still get a paper copy. And I have every single edition that's ever been.
Whoa.
But I mean, if we're going to, we could, you know, and this is probably a rabbit hole that we could go down and actually do a whole post or a whole pod on like the journals that we get, right? Mm-hmm. So for the nerds who are listening, here's the rabbit hole that I've gone down. I mean, I'm going to Finland next year for the Play Conference, the Association for the Study of Play. Like I have personally started to dabble outside, you know, the NAYC. I mean, I have for a long time, but I'm just saying the whole research of play that is not exclusive to early childhood education has actually been really interesting to kind of broaden my understanding of all how the concept and the study of play is a multifaceted, area of study. And it's not just limited to what we're all doing in our dress up centers and our block center. I mean, it's a huge, huge thing. You know, and I'm like trying to muster up the balls and the courage to like present my research to these people. Like, I very rarely feel intimidated, but like I feel a little intimidated around these guys. But and that's how you stretch yourself and, you know, I think push out of the echo chamber.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even beyond research, I think there's a lot of room for just common sense.
Oh, well, yeah, there's like, write that on the list. Yeah,
a lot of room for common sense. Just the idea that we are built. We have evolved this far for something way bigger than this idea that we can fulfill ourselves with worksheets and block centers and and forced activity just in general. Like every time I have to argue with someone about kids climbing up on my fence, I'm like, well, we've evolved so many millions of years to do this. Like that's what we're here for.
They're
like,
not falling.
Yeah, and I've got a teacher at my program who she goes barefoot for everything. She's super minimalist because she's read a whole bunch of research herself about how humans, everything you see a chimpanzee doing,
we should be able to do.
We are built with the capability to do. But one of the first steps to stifling that capability is the fact that we all wear shoes.
Shoes.
Like first huge thing. And then just this this whole idea that is wild and we don't want to be wild. We want to be domesticated.
I don't.
And no child does. No animal wants to be domesticated. Like I just learned the other day that cats aren't actually domesticated at all. By the real definition, like house cats are not domesticated, but no animal wants to. So every kid is like a little cat who's in this situation where everybody wants them to be domesticated. And everyone's
they're going
to
go piss in your shoes. Yeah.
Is that why I feel like my cat is like the angriest roommate I've ever had?
Why can't we be that accepting of the children?
your cat is a passive aggressive, angry roommate?
Yeah.
Like someone's cat could pee in their bed and they're just like, oh, that's Roscoe. But if a kid does it, I mean.
Right? We don't ever say that.
That's Roscoe.
That was Billy.
It's immediate punishment. Like, obviously, most kids probably aren't going to do that. But probably on the same level as a kid not wanting to sit down.
Well, and that's what Jeff talks a lot about that. You know, the kid that's jumping off the table during your circle time, mm-hmm. you know, is not trying to be an ass. He's trying to give you information.
Yeah. It's communication.
Really?
What? Oh, look, there we go. Wait.
Look, it's Roscoe. Tiffany just put an image of a monkey up on the screen.
That's an ape.
That's not a monkey. Come on.
Chimpanzee.
Come on.
Monkey, ape.
Hey, your opinion doesn't matter. What matters is science. It's a chimpanzee.
How is a chimpanzee not a monkey?
Monkeys have tails.
For reals?
Monkeys have tails.
Is there not? What's the overarching? you know, Homo sapien. What's this for the monkey business?
Oh, the monkey business.
Let's look it up. Let's look up the family.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah. A chimp would be under here, and an orangutan would be under
there. We got primates, and
we
got primates, and we got monkeys, and we got apes and great apes, don't we?
Yeah, they refer to them here as monkeys and apes. New world and old world monkeys.
We need to check our source, guys.
Because you found this on the Google.
I just think Gibbons is a great name for an animal, and I love them.
What are the ones that go, hoo, 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 hoo,
Gibbons.
Hoo, hoo.
Gibbons.
I love them.
What was that again?
No, one show a night.
Oh, okay.
I find myself at the zoo all the time listening to the Gibbons.
All right. This has been another episode.
How do we wrap? No, come on, because she's going to come back and be like that and do that.
Oh, no,
got something?
I'm going to wrap. I did.
Let's wrap this up with research should be available to everyone. It's sad we have to pay for it.
Why?
As a director.
Why is it sad we have to pay for it?
You should be able to learn anything you want to learn.
Well, and somebody had to pay to have that research done, so shouldn't they recoup some of their expenses for doing that to pay their researchers and pay for their labs and shit?
I was just listening to a podcast about how ridiculous copyright laws are in America and everywhere else. It's just kind of like this whole idea of intellectual property is not what we view it as here, almost anywhere else in the world. Like...
That's my idea.
That information just goes out and you make it like just, what was it? Tesla, the new car, the car company, well, not new, but the car company that's making all these electric cars, they released all of their patents from copyright.
Really?
Elon Musk. Yeah,
because they want everybody to be able to expand on the science that they've already created.
Was that like the TED Radio or TED? Yeah.
TED Radio Hour. They were talking about that, and that was really interesting. But then at the same time, you have to think, okay, well, Tesla is a huge company. They can afford to do that.
So
that's not.
But also, look at the lack of ego. I mean, I don't know all the nuances of what you're talking about, but like, how cool is that? That you're like, you know what? I was able to get you this far. Go. Figure it out. Make it better.
Yeah.
So the research should be free. Tiffany, should Lisa's new book that just got released, should that be handed out for free too? Because people want the information. Should Lisa Murphy be running around the country?
But they could get that for free if they really wanted to. They could borrow it from somebody.
Yeah. Go to the library. I guess that's the part that makes me mad. You can't go to the library and have instant access to this information.
Well, a lot of times our books aren't in. As long as it's old enough, that's fucking awesome. Our books, my Red Leaf books, aren't in the library.
My mind is being blown again.
But if you know someone who has it, like I'm on so many groups and they post your book over.
All you need is a freaking copy machine.
Yeah. I just need, well, or just or borrow a, it.
Yeah, or sm-
you
or
can't sm- just borrow research usually, though.
Or a smartphone, somebody... just page by page, taking pictures of Lisa's book.
Oh, yeah, because I have nothing better to do with my time. Trademark and copyright violate my own material. Put it up there for free.
This is a great wrap up, guys.
I had a wrap up already to go.
Did I steal another one from you? I'm sorry. I'm the wrap up stealer this week. Sorry.
What have we learned this week? Well, we've learned one, that you can't come in from the sunshine and recreate a conversation that you had.
Yeah, because we talked about none of this out there.
Because this went completely different places. We learned that that if you start talking about research journals, Tiffany will have a nerdgasm. And we learned a couple interesting websites where you can go out and find stuff. And we learned it's important to get outside the echo chamber. Get a little bit beyond what you're already thinking, what you're already believing. Stretch yourself a little bit and push yourself a little bit further down your trajectory as a professional in this field. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Be back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.